Welcome to the Culture and Sports Podcast, where we have discussions about how leadership and organizational culture impact organizational success, team and athlete performance, and the short and long-term mental, physical, and emotional health of athletes. The Culture and Sports Podcast is brought to you by Culture and Sports. Culture and Sports helps sports organizations, teams, coaches, support and front office staff, and athletes understand the importance of leadership and organizational culture and its direct impact to success. Please join Lori Okamura and Dr. Jeremy Piasecki in this season of the Culture and Sports Podcast. Welcome back to the Culture and Sports Podcast. We would like to introduce a very special guest, Shannon Webb. Shannon played volleyball at American University from 2016 to 2018, and she finished her collegiate volleyball career at Southern Utah University in 2019. Shannon is currently a physician assistant in Pocatello, Idaho. Thank you so much for joining us today, Shannon. Can you please share your volleyball career with us from when you first found the sport to your final match?
Yeah, sure. So my parents actually met playing volleyball, and so I got put in the sport pretty young. It was always my idea, but it was always kind of, okay, you're tall. They knew the sport. I was going to do it. So started playing rec in about third grade. And then when I was old enough for clubs when I was like 12, I started playing club. Ended up playing kind of club throughout the Denver area, Colorado Springs area, and did pretty well. We did very well at like nationals at the club level, won a state high school tournament my senior year. And then during that time, I was recruited to play at American University in Washington, D.C. It's a smaller Division I school, but pretty successful in the volleyball world. We played the year before I got there. I think they made it to the Sweet 16. Just kind of a little bit of a hidden gem. So I went there. We won two Patriot League titles, played in two NCAA tournaments. And then my senior year, I ended up transferring to Southern Utah University. And there I won Big Sky Newcomer of the Year and had a really fantastic experience there as well.
As you know, this season we've been taking a deep dive into the lived experience of athletes under a toxic and abusive culture at the University of Idaho's volleyball program. But as we introduced you, and also as you spoke about your playing career, you never played at the University of Idaho, but you did previously play under their head coach. Can you please share when and where that was?
Yeah, so it was my junior year at American University. So the spring of 2018 until the fall of 2018 is when I played for him.
And can you please share what your lived experience was there?
Yeah, so my first 2 years at American were super positive. Playing two NCAA tournaments, really positive team culture. My best friends were on this team. Everything seemed to be going really well. And then my kind of is what happens in college sports is when you do well, your assistant coaches end up being promoted to higher levels at other schools. And so one of our assistant coaches got a head coaching job at the end of my sophomore season. And so we were due to hire a new assistant coach. Chris Gonzalez was hired at that point, and from there the culture really changed. It's kind of subtle at first, just okay, this guy's really intense. This guy's a little bit different. He really knows his stuff, but he's different. This is going to be a different season. And then from there, I mean, I was going to be a junior. I started my first 2 years. I was like, this is going to be my breakout season. This is going to be my time to kind of sign. We hadn't graduated any seniors, I think we graduated one senior following my sophomore year. So we were returning most of our starters, if not all of our starters. And so we were like, this is the year. You know, we had the group in front of us who had made a Sweet 16, and we wanted to do it. We wanted to be that group that did that. Again, kind of put American back on the map again. So worked really hard that summer. I actually ended up going to Europe to kind of get some more playing experience. And it was just, you know, things were going really well, I thought. And then fall of our junior year, everything seemed to change. I was always one of those people that just like, most people say, like, going into college sports, like, you're not going to have fun every single day. Like, it's going to be hard. And there's a lot of people that do it, not because they don't love the sport, but because it's what they do with their volleyball players. And it's a scholarship and it's an opportunity. And there were days that I felt like that, but to be completely honest, like, I loved almost every second of being a college athlete. I loved practices. It was the best part of my day. I loved hanging out with my teammates. I loved travel trips. Like, I really, really, truly loved my experience as a college athlete. And that sophomore year, just everything changed. Or sorry, my junior year, everything changed. You know, went to preseason and was just all of a sudden I'm crying after practice because I was getting yelled at for messing up in like free ball drills, which is just not me. And just very kind of ended up like resenting my people that were playing over me. Not because I didn't respect them as people, but because I felt like I wasn't getting a fair shake. And, you know, went from being a pretty happy-go-lucky, positive person to all of a sudden just being like, I hate this. I don't want to go to practice. And that happened. That was kind of gradually over the season. I remember we had a tournament in California, and which is, you know, very far from D.C., and we were basically, you know, we were gonna do well. This is our time to, you know, play against the West Coast teams, make a name for ourselves. We lost every single game, and the lineup stayed the same every single game. And I remember the benches were kind of looking at, what is this? Like, we have a bunch of girls that can contribute. Like, we can be beating these teams. Like, they were talented teams, but, you know, we were upperclassmen, done it before. Like, why aren't we even getting a chance? And I kind of remember joking, or I was half joking. I was like, oh, I'll just transfer next year. Like, I don't need this place. Like, they don't respect me. Like, I'll just transfer. Like, totally joking. And then about halfway through, like, October of that year, so we're almost halfway through the season, my head coach comes up to me, and he had before had been extremely positive, just, like, really, really good person, good coach. And he's kind of asking around, like, we're all peppering, and he's asking around, and he did this all the time, just kind of just a random question of the day. Like, what's your favorite food? What do you have for dinner? Where's the best place you want for vacation? And that day's question has been, basically, how many more credits do you have to graduate? And it was directed more towards the juniors. And I had always wanted to be a physician assistant or go to med school or something like that. And I knew as a college athlete, I was going to need to get extra experience outside of just a clinical experience, as a college experience. And I worked really hard in high school, really hard in college, and was on track to graduate a semester early. And so being proud of that, I was like, I can graduate after my senior year of playing. Like, how cool is that? Like, I get to, you know, kind of best of both worlds. I'll get to finish my senior season, and then I'll get to go and get my clinical experience. And, you know, being proud of that. And probably the next week, I get called aside after practice, and I'm told, okay, Shannon, like, just so you know, we're taking a scholarship away next year because you don't really need it, because you don't need enough credit. And at that point, I mean, I was already pretty underwhelmed with the playing and the culture of that particular team that junior year. But at that point, I was done. And just the culture just totally changed. We were like robots being told exactly where to hit on free ball plays, being expected to look a certain way, act a certain way. I felt like being judged for being silly. And this is just not the program we'd been a part of before. You know, at this point I was like, okay, like, this isn't right. Like, I don't mean to be like toot my own horn or anything, but I was like, I was a good student athlete. And I was like a, you know, 3.8, 3.9 GPA starter, like, never late. I was always the one giving the recruit tours. And I was like, what gives? Like, what did I do wrong? So I ended up going to a bunch of compliance people and said, look, like, what, this isn't right. Like, looked over my student handbook to say, like, there is no reason for my scholarship to be taken away at this point. And was kind of honestly gaslighted and told, well, we never promised you a full ride scholarship. Well, scholarships are always renewable year to year. And then I was like, okay, well, then I'm leaving. And at this point, I had totally lost just hope for that program, for that coach. And decide, well, I'm transferred. And at that point, I was pulled from all different angles. Okay, no one wants you. You're a senior. No one's going to want you. You could just stay here. Like, just finish your degree here. It's going to be too hard. No one likes you. You're going to be your problem child. kind of things like that. And luckily I had some really spectacular like guidance from a club level, and where it was able to kind of get out of that situation. But it was just a totally different situation culture wise. And I feel like a large part of that was symbolic.
Was there, Shannon, a moment when you entered, you know, prepared and entered into that junior season, coaching change, you know, Chris comes into the program. Was there a moment that you can pinpoint that things changed, or did it seem like it kind of just came on in waves, or was more gradual?
It felt pretty gradual. I mean, there were moments here or there where I just realized it was different. One thing that we did that was pretty cool at American is the program would have had to pay money for us to stay in the dorms for preseason. And so our coach said, okay, instead of paying money for the dorms, we'll pay money and we'll rent a beach house in Virginia Beach and we'll practice at a local club facility. Which is super unusual, super unique. We called it Beach Week. And it was basically like 2 weeks of the entire team, all the coaches living together in one house. And, you know, it was crazy and people, you know, not necessarily normal, but it was kind of like a great like team bonding. And I remember Chris just being like, this is stupid. Why are we doing this? It's such a waste of time. Why are we, you know, it just seemed to think it was very silly. Like we did a lot of, you know, we'd go out to dinner more or we'd cook. You know, we'd be laying on the, we spent so much time together, like just doing puzzles or watching TV, but it was always as a team, like team bonding stuff. And Chris was always just kind of on the outside rolling his eyes and like just made it very clear that we were silly for doing these things. So that was a big moment. And then I have a very specific memory of doing the free ball drill. And like I said, it was just more like a moment that I remembered. And it wasn't like I was doing anything, like I wasn't doing anything amazing, but I wasn't screwing up that poorly. And it's preseason, like you're trying to change your shoes don't fit. You know, you're trying to get back in the groove. You're working people you haven't worked with in a long time. And he just yelled at me and screamed at me and was like, Shannon, what's the point of you even being here if you can't even pass the free ball? I could pass the free ball. But like I was so discouraged at this point that I don't even remember who my passes were at this point. I just remember how I felt. I remember sitting, you know, we had to drive back to the house and I'm in a van and he's driving and I'm just sitting in the back because I feel so defeated and like nothing being done. There's no comfort being given. There's no, you know, I'm not pulled aside. I'm sorry that you have to do that because yada, yada, yada. You know, it was just like stone cold quiet. I'm in the back. And at this point, I was like, oh no, like this isn't going to be good.
Yeah. That something is different than what it used to be. Did you also notice this same sort of you know, the experience that you had? Did you notice any other teammates that might have you know, gone through the same thing that you had, or noticed that there was some, you know, visible difference, right, in the dynamic of the team?
Yeah, there was absolutely like favoritism and not favoritism. There were girls that could do no wrong. Could have done that drill the same way I did it and would have been praised to no end. And there were girls, and I was definitely on the end, you know, the very other end. And there was a couple of other girls that were as well. We had one freshman that year, and she was literally 7 feet tall. So, which I mean, in the volleyball world, tall, but she was very tall. And she was from Canada, and she was a freshman, only freshman. So she was kind of came in with a, you know, like a deer with the headlights on, like just, I mean, it's so hard being a freshman, but to be the only freshman in a new country, like I can't even imagine. But she came in and was really trying to work hard and kind of to catch up to that level, because we had a group of girls that had been playing together for 2 years at that point. And she was never even good. Like we would do like agility drills, or you know, I with her in particular, I remember we would just made us do like for like 3 minutes, and it was always before practice. And I mean, it wasn't easy, and we'd kind of get through it. But this girl would, she struggled, and we were always kind of ridiculed for supporting her or, you know, trying to talk to her. And Chris would just like stand over her and just like yell at her and basically say that like she didn't deserve to be there, she couldn't even do this plank, like what was she even doing? and just really like beat her down. And at that point, I just think that like the whole team was scared to support her. And there were a couple of other girls too who were kind of treated in a similar way to me. After I left, there was two girls who were not told about spring practices. They were just left off the list before Chris left. These were girls that had kind of seen the writing on the wall and kind of been considering transferring too. But to just be totally left off of spring practice, and these were girls that had started. And it was just,
yeah,
you know, you were favored or you weren't favored, and if you weren't favored, good luck.
So it's fair to say that not only did the culture of the team dynamic change, but then actual physical aspects of the team, like the being left out of spring practice or being ridiculed for supporting a teammate, you know, who was struggling or trying to be supportive, you know, of your teammates. It's fair to say that these are some of the things that you noticed after the coaching change and after Chris Gonzalez arrived at American University. Fair to say?
Yeah. Absolutely, yes.
So what I was wondering, you know, it's interesting because some of the things that you've described in your lived experience are actually things that we've heard from other athletes, not only athletes at the University of Idaho who play for Chris, you know, currently, but some other people that had tried to reach out, you know, from past organizations and teams. I think the statistic that we have, Jeremy, correct me if I'm wrong, is that over the course of about a 21 or 22 year coaching career, Chris may have been in at least 15 different institutions or, you know, organizations, everything from club volleyball to college, you know, different levels of college. And then, of course, a number of international appointments and engagements, you know, professional level. So my curiosity, and I ask this question of almost everybody, and I run into quite a few people now that have said, I remember that coach, or I, you know, back in, and we're much old, I'm much older than you are. So this has been, I've got people from like the 1980s who say, oh my God, I can't believe, you know, this guy's still coaching, right? So to be fair, right, I'm just talking about what the, you know, what the athletes have shared. And it's everything from at one point they may have thought that they did something. Like I heard you say when you were explaining to us, like, what did I do wrong? You know, why all of a sudden, you know, are you somebody who has had an excellent career at the school, you know, that they were recruited to, who had, you know, a tradition of success, at least up until that point, right? And then all of a sudden, it's like, well, what changed? You know, is it me? So I hear that a lot from some of the people. The others, every once in a while, we'll hear from somebody in this particular case, and we're using this as a case study, who say, well, I couldn't believe when I heard the news, you know, that this coach had been hired at this university, and I really wanted to figure out, like, who could I tell, or who could I say something to, you know, about that. So I just wanted to ask you a little bit, like, did you ever have, you know, that moment, and maybe, you know, also some of your teammates or people that you're, you know, that you're still in touch with. I mean, fortunately, it sounds like you were able to transfer and at least end your career in a better, you know, better environment. But was there any point, like, when you learned, or how did you learn that this coach that you had experience with all these years, you know, later ends up, you know, head coaching at the University of Idaho? And what impact did that have on you? Like, what questions did that raise, you know, in your mind, having had that experience, you know, at American?
Yeah, so I ended up transferring to Southern Utah University, which was at the time in the Big Sky Conference, which is what Idaho was in. And so that kind of region of volleyball, the small world in general, but especially like a specific conference is even smaller. So play against University of Idaho, kind of knew what their program was about. And then actually had my coaches at Southern Utah ended up being the assistant coaches at University of Idaho. And, with Debbie Buchanan. And then when she left, they had actually applied for the job. And you know, I'm kind of watching this job because I love these coaches, and I'm like, oh, I hope they get that job. Like, how fantastic would that be for them? And then I get the news that Chris Gonzalez is hired, and I I think I cried. My jaw hit the floor. There was a lot of emotions going on that day. I had actually had nightmares when I was at Southern Utah after I had transferred, and where these coaches would get fired and they would bring in Chris. And I mean, I would literally wake up in the middle of the night, like, because I couldn't imagine that. And so at that point, when I heard he was fired, I was like, these girls are living my nightmare. And there had actually been a couple of girls that I didn't play club with, but had played at my same club, who were committed to Idaho specifically because I had told them to play for Idaho because I love the assistant coach so much. And there was a couple of other girls that had kind of been recruited by Southern Utah that ended up following these coaches to Idaho. And I'm not going to say, oh, they did it because of me, but I was definitely like, oh, yeah, like, you know what, you have two options. You can either play for a school that has, like, tradition, or you can play for coaches that have, like, good morals and character and are going to make you a better person. And, you know, in my opinion, it was way more fulfilling to play for, like, a building program where you have really good coaches and kind of mm-hmm. play for a program with tradition that didn't have as good a culture. So I had really sold these to these girls and, you know, told these girls that had options from bigger names that you could go play for these coaches. And then, and even saying, like, I played for this really toxic environment, this really abusive coach, like, and it was so much work, so much better to play for a lesser school than to, you know, go to the top dog, essentially. And then he gets hired. And I, the amount of guilt that I felt, oh my gosh. I mean, I still feel guilty about it, to be completely honest. I know I had nothing to do with it, but, you know, I'm telling these girls I'm not playing for Chris, and they ended up in that playing for Chris. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was pretty terrible.
So Shannon, a lot of people that I talk to, just over time, let me backtrack a little bit. So I have my doctorate in leadership, specifically organizational culture, and my doctoral research was on the lived experience of people who were adversely impacted by toxic leadership in organizations. Okay, so that was my doctoral research. I spent many, many years doing it. A lot of people that I talk to is, well, everyone's had a bad coach. Everyone's had a bad boss. What is the difference for you between a bad coach and a toxic coach?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think a bad coach, I mean, anyone can go out and tell people what to do on a court. They're not always going to be right. And to me, a bad coach is going to be someone that maybe they're not as connected to the team. Maybe they're not necessarily doing what's right as the X's and O's goes, and there's some disagreements or... You know, there's the thing about coaching from what, you know, I haven't coached, but they're literally their jobs are in the hands of like 15, 18, 22 year old girls. Like that can't be easy, but like that's part of the job. And so I think there's the coaches that embrace that, and maybe they don't do great with it. They might be bad coaches, but the coaches that resent the fact that you're 18 to 22 years old, or that resent the fact that you're women, resent the fact that you're American, or, you know, college students or whatever, those tend to be the toxic coaches. And the coaches that are also putting teammates against each other, blaming teammates for the team's problems instead of taking responsibility. I'm kind of thinking a specific example. When I was kind of fighting to keep my scholarship at American, there was a team meeting where, we're in the locker room and were watching film, and film with Chris was always the blame game. You'd watch film, and the idea was never just to watch yourself. It was always, what did you do wrong on that play? What did you do wrong, or what was positive, what did you do wrong? Even if you didn't touch the ball, you know, why was your foot 2 feet to the left of where it should have been? Like, that play was your fault. You're the reason we lost the game. So going through one of these, which is, you know, miserable to begin with. And then all of a sudden, I'm being called selfish and a terrible teammate because I won't give up my scholarship to girls that really need it. And at this point, I'm like, you know, I wasn't silent about my scholarship situation. I was like, I didn't do anything wrong. Like, I'm not going to try to keep it hidden that my scholarship is being taken away because these other girls deserve to know what's going on as well. And so everyone knows what's going on, but, you know, I'm sitting in the corner being called selfish and no one's standing up for me. And, you know, coaches walk out of the room and then people are supporting me. But it's like, to me, like the toxicity of that is it's your fault. And then the fear of letting teammates support each other seems to be more toxic.
So one of the things you talked about earlier was that there were favorites and there were not. Okay. Do you think the favorites were free and clear of the toxicity and abuse, or do you think that they just weren't targeted as much as those who were not favorites?
A little bit of both. I wasn't a favorite, so it's a little bit hard for me to speak to that. In our situation, American, we had a kind of a culture of taking a lot of international players. So that junior year, I actually, my roommates and, you know, best friends and best friends to this day were Polish, Danish, and Swiss. And one of the things that the coaches allowed them to do was they were playing with their national teams over the summer. And so they would be like a week late to preseason, which is not unusual, but not totally unexpected. And it's like, you know, one of the reasons we were able to get some of these international players. And these girls were, we were told that we were just holding these spots until these girls got back. And so these girls, like, because, I don't know if it was because they were, and they hadn't started the year before, but because they were international, they were kind of automatic, they had these spots held for them. That didn't mean that they didn't work hard or didn't deserve a chance to try, but, like, if you, you know, part of the risk of missing the beginning of the season is you miss the opportunity to start the beginning of the season. And so they definitely got kind of free and clear a little bit in that part, but they, I mean, of course they were impacted by the culture. When instead of having a supportive bench, you have a bench of girls that are miserable and sad, or, you know, there were girls that were playing through injuries because they were, you know, they were favored and so they could do no wrong. That also included, like, they could do no wrong. Like, they, if they put a toe out of line, then they were going, you know, that even if that toe out of line was hurting a shoulder, needed to sit out at that, sitting out a game. And I mean, that year too, we went from winning the Patriot League tournament to we lost the Patriot League tournament, which, you know, getting second, it's not like that was a big deal, but for that team, it was. And we had lost to teams, I think that we, you know, American's the big dog in that league. But we lost to a team that I don't think the program had ever lost to. So in like 30 years, we were the first team to lose to one of these teams. And, you know, these teams, it wasn't that that team wasn't good or didn't deserve, but just, that's a big change in, you know, the performance of the team changed as well.
So one things that I noticed when I was listening to you was that there seemed to be a lot of isolation going on. It seems like Chris Gonzalez would isolate you as players, whether it was yelling at you directly, but then prohibiting athlete support of that player. And like when you were very upset in the van and everyone was driving and it was just super quiet in there. You know, in my experience, not only my own lived experience, but in my experience of conducting research, it seems like a lot of the other athletes were probably afraid to speak up and say something because of further targeting, or maybe if they were the favorites, they were afraid of being in the same situation as many of the other athletes. So with that said, do you think isolation was one of Chris Gonzalez's key things that he did to try to control athletes and try to control the team, the direction of the team? Or do you think that there was no plan and he just was upset equally with everyone and just targeted people randomly? Like, was it a random attack or was it very precise and direct?
I think it was pretty precise. I think that he kind of knew the girls that he would be able to manipulate. I'm a people pleaser. I was going, you know, I'm the type of person that I really do care what people think of me. I really do want to be liked. I do want to be, you know, I know it's not possible to be perfect, but I'm dang well going to try to be as perfect as I can be. I'm used to that. And so I think there was a very easy way to manipulate me there because if he had done it correctly, but I would have changed who I was as a person to be accepted by that. I think part of the thing too with me is I was with that scholarship, and the scholarship, from what I understand, was planned to be given to a Turkish girl. He wanted a Turkish girl to take that scholarship from me. But they were like, well, Shannon's not going to leave the school. She only has a semester left. Like, why would she leave? And so I think in that way, I was an easy target. I don't necessarily know if Chris tried to isolate us as much as didn't see the advantage of team, I don't know if that makes sense. Like, because when you're in a bus and when you're with the girls for 20 hours, you know, over a weekend in a bus, and you're singing songs and you're doing silly things, like, and that's not necessarily normal, mature 22-year-old girl behavior, but when you're with a team on a bus, like, that's just what happens. And Chris was always very dismissive of that and rolling his eyes at that. And so even though he might not have said, like, do not speak to each other, do not, you know, don't do these silly things, when he's choosing to drive home in his car versus being on the bus, or choosing to go out of his way to get different food than us, or, you know, not participating in our games, and our other coaches did, you know, and they weren't always, you know, sometimes they were really, I'll say, important games. Something we did was called current events. This is with international players as well. And every Wednesday before practice, we would take probably a good half hour before practice. And we were told, you find a current event, and it can be a current event in your life or a current event in life from the news, from your hometown, from your home country, whatever, and share it. You're kind of like a show and tell, which you're like, okay, that's kind of weird for a volleyball team. But what it ended up doing is I'm saying, oh my gosh, it snowed 4 feet in Denver and all these flights got canceled. And it really affected our economy. And then you get the girl from Poland who's talking about, you know, Holocaust Memorial Day, or, you know, something going on in Auschwitz, like something like that. And so you really have this, like, really unique culture going on. And our head coach used to say, you know, everyone's got problems. And so it's like, what's your problem? And it wasn't saying it's like, oh, like, everyone's got problems, like, get over it. It's every, you know, we are so blessed to be here. And then Chris would refuse to participate in that game. He thought it was silly. He would sit to the side. He wouldn't bring anything, or he'd like resent it, which I know sounds kind of like, you're like, well, what's the big deal? Like, it's just like a thing before practice. But for us, it was like, how are we connecting? How are we coming together as a community of culture?
Exactly.
And so I think kind of by doing that, he was, and by voicing his displeasure, showing his displeasure with that thing, he really made it clear that he didn't want to know us as people or as person. He didn't care who Shannon the human was, or, you know, who all these girls, or he never wanted opened up for us to trust him either. And so I think by doing that, he did cause isolation. And I don't necessarily, like, I don't know if he meant to do it, but I don't think he understood or understands how to build a team of 18 to 22 year old girls.
So you're currently a physician assistant, and you've gone through lots of training, lots of school. What are some of the things in your current role that you would see from athletes or just people in general that are going through an extremely toxic or abusive culture, or they work for a completely abusive or toxic leader or organization? What are some of the physical ailments that you might see from people that are experiencing that?
Yeah, so I currently work in an emergency room. So I'm not necessarily seeing, let's say, the day-to-day kind of checkups or things like that. But, I mean, there's a lot more toxic and abusive relationships, whether it be family relationships or, domestic relationships out there that I think people want to see. I think they're definitely out there. And I think we do see a lot of people who, you know, people have constant stomach aches, headaches, migraines, they're losing weight, they're binge eating, you know, lots of things like that. And then if you get bad enough, you do get people who are physically harming themselves or self-medicating. And that's not any, you know, that's never going to end well. Any of that thing isn't going to end well. Stress in the body is, you know, going to negatively affect people, especially as athletes, but it'll affect people long-term as well.
So Shannon, I guess, you know, what in my mind, you know, there's this pattern that I'm hearing, right? Pattern of things that happened to you, you know, at American, things that happened to other, you know, guests that we have had or will have, you know, on the podcast. And again, with trying to connect the dots, is there anything that you would share, like some advice that you wish you had, or maybe somebody had, you know, shared with you, or if you could have gotten some support when this was happening to you, you know, in your junior year, is there anything that you might share with the women from this year's team, you know, at Idaho that really took, you know, some big risks, and some of them are still paying, you know, in retaliation and such. But is there anything that you might share with them, like having heard or read their story and maybe, you know, that moment of validation that you spoke about, you know, I'd love to give you an opportunity to maybe just share some things with them that you wish maybe, you know, somebody might have shared with you.
Sure. I mean, those girls have been so brave and so fearless. And I would just kind of encourage them to continue that and know that, yes, volleyball and your college experience is always going to shape you, and it's always going to be a huge part of your life and who you are as a person. But you're not, I mean, I remember people telling me this, and I really didn't believe them at the time. But I mean, it's the little things, it's the bus rides, it's the meals together, it's the team, it's being in the locker rooms after games, before games. And don't, as much as you can, don't let a toxic coach impact that. Like, lean on each other, make your own community. But then also, just, this isn't a situation that defines you. This isn't, you aren't who he says you are. You know, he's going to tell you, he sees you as stupid or negative or silly, and you're not. You're strong. You're valued. You are so much, you know, you're a good athlete, but you're so much more than that. And that this experience that they're going through, is matter how terrible as it is, as much as you can, make lemonade from your lemons. And it might be hard to see that right now, like, how is it going to be turned positive? But I mean, I think at this point in my life, I don't want to say I'm glad that this happened to me, because I'm not, but at the same time, there's so many things in my life that who I am because of this, because of what was done to me. I'm stronger, I'm more fearless, I'm more likely to stand up for myself. And that doesn't mean that there's days where it doesn't, let's say, haunt me, or I hear a voice in my head, which I'm sure comes from that. But at the same time, like, it's just a part of your story.
Thank you so much for joining us on today's episode, Shannon. You know, I'm sure it was hard for you. I know it was hard for me, hard for Lori, and I'm sure it's going to be hard for all of, or a lot of our audience members, but thank you so much for sharing your own lived experience with us. And hopefully, organizations and coaches and front office staff will learn from this episode and others that we do with the Culture and Sports Podcast.
And that's a wrap for this week's episode of the Culture and Sports Podcast. We hope that this episode has started an internal dialogue, or even one with your team, about the importance of leadership and organizational culture. If you'd like to learn more about Culture and Sports, the Culture and Sports Podcast, or other programs, go to cultureandsports.com, where there is a wealth of resources, articles, research, podcasts, video shows, webinars, and courses. And don't forget to connect with us on social media, on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, YouTube, and LinkedIn at Culture and Sports, and on Twitter @CultureInSport. Thank you for tuning in to the Culture in Sports podcast.